ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Anthony Burke here, host of By Design on ABC Radio National, a show about the clever ideas and human stories behind the spaces, systems, and objects shaping everyday life. Whether you're curious about architecture, interior design, fashion, or anything in between, we reveal why design matters in a rapidly changing world. By Design on ABC Listen.
Coming to you from NARM, Melbourne, on ABC Radio National, this is Life Matters. Hello, I'm Beverly Wang. And we've talked about a lot of intimate topics on our Existential Fridays. Many times you've opened up and shared your views and struggles around sex, relationships, and being vulnerable, and I thank you for that. So now I'm going to ask you about money, and in particular about debt. How much do you owe, and how do you feel about that? Are you equally happy to share, or did something in your chest just tighten up? Today, let's break through one of the last dinner table taboos and have a non-judgmental talk about the way debt affects our lives. And in 40 minutes' time, the aunties step through the complications of age gap friendships. Let's talk. I know that for me, that post-Christmas credit card bill really weighed me down. I feel like I've just recovered from that. And even if I'm being careful with my purchases, things add up. Why does it feel like it takes so long to recover financially? Why do we tap on add to cart and proceed to checkout when we know we can't afford it? Whatever the number is on your credit card bill or mortgage or buy now, pay later account, tell me how you're coping with financial stress. Because last year, 47% of Australians with debt struggled to make their repayments. So if you've ever felt that quiet panic when a payment is due, you are very far from alone. And, you know, thinking about debt can bring up a lot: stress, shame, embarrassment. And for some of you listening, you might be thinking, yes, okay, debt isn't ideal, but it's also my only option right now. Well, my guest this morning believed that no matter how big that number feels, you can build a healthier relationship with your debt. And it starts by taking shame out of the equation. So we are not here to judge what's in your cart, what's on your credit card balance, or any of your past decisions. On board with me for this conversation is Vicky Staff. Vicky is a financial counselor and coordinator of the National Debt Helpline. And Dr. Luke Martin is a clinical psychologist and senior specialist at Beyond Blue. They have a lot of experience in this area. They can offer general advice. Vicky and Luke, welcome to Life Matters.
G'day, Bev. Great to be with you.
Thank you for being here. Vicky, I'm going to start with you. What are you hearing from people on the phone lines this year?
Hi, Beverly. So far this year on the National Debt Helpline, we've had a really surprising increase in the number of people reaching out for help, essentially higher than we've ever had before. So this is telling us really that people, you know, are really still hurting from the cost of living crisis, and also that debt hangover has hit a lot earlier than we actually expected from Christmas. So we've got people calling through who were saying things like, I've never asked for help before. I've never called you guys before. I've tried everything that I can think of, and I just don't know what else to do.
What are some of the common emotions people are expressing when they do ring?
There's often high levels of distress when people contact the National Debt Helpline. Certainly a sense of helplessness as well, tapping into that idea of, you know, I just don't know what is available for me and what I can do from here.
And have you noticed any different trends in terms of gender or age groups calling in?
I would say that in terms of gender and age groups, it's pretty similar. What we have noticed, though, over the last few years is that we have more and more people contacting us who are employed. Previously, you know, we would have expected a lot more people who were unemployed, perhaps reliant on Centrelink. But what we're seeing now are people who are, you know, full-time employed, double-income households, these sorts of things.
Luke, how does financial pressure and debt come up in the conversations with clients about their mental health?
Yeah, so we hear about it absolutely every day as that gap between what it costs to live and the money I've got to live keeps on growing. So this cost of living crisis has been the number one factor that has influenced people's mental health over the last few years. And that link between our financial position and our mental health is very strong. And so when you are worried and stressed about your money, that can really erode your mental health over time. And then when your mental health is struggling, it can be harder to do the things you need to do to get back on top of your finances. So we hear a lot about this downward spiral, and people can kind of feel like they're in a hole that they're finding it hard to get out of. That helplessness and hopelessness that Vicky mentioned, we hear a lot of that as well.
You know, one of the things that, you know, the reasons why we spend money are many and various, you know, cost of living, basic daily needs. But there's also that aspect of buying things because it makes us feel good or we want to treat someone who we care about. Even if we know that we can't afford it, we still do it. What is going on psychologically for us when, you know, we click add to cart, check out now, when we know we can't really afford it?
Yeah, the old add to cart moment's a real kind of, you know, decision point. I think if we view this from the lens of, often it's called therapeutic spending, and this is a purchase that's designed to shift us out of an uncomfortable emotional state. And so the brain releases a whole bunch of dopamine because we anticipate the rewards of getting the thing, and that actually, you know, feels good in the moment and it shifts those emotions away. But if we rely on that as our main coping strategy, if we over-rely on it, we're not really addressing the underlying emotions and we can get ourselves in a lot of financial strains. I think we also need to acknowledge there's a whole machine that's really kind of forcing us to make those purchases as quickly as possible, as often
so
as possible.
It's so easy now, isn't it?
The friction is completely gone.
Yeah.
And so I really think we need to treat ourselves really kindly if we've gotten stuck in these patterns, because it's kind of, you know, we're up against some really big forces.
Absolutely. Thank you for pointing that out. That's the voice of Dr. Luke Barton. He's a clinical psychologist and senior specialist at Beyond Blue. Also joining me on Life Matters this morning is Vicky Staff, a financial counselor and coordinator of the National Debt Helpline. And here, it's a non-judgmental conversation. We can do what we can to help you. Vicky and Luke can share some general advice. And we're going to welcome our very first caller from Sarah in Canberra. Welcome to Life Matters, Sarah. What kind of debt situation are you in?
Good morning, Bev. I have a huge debt, basically. So it's $180,000 in HEX.
Wow.
And just the concept of trying to pay that down and maybe eventually owning my own home and how to balance those two things is slightly terrifying when the amount it keeps going up every year is more than is being repaid by quite a huge
amount.
How
many years into this HEX debt are you, and how many years do you think it will take for you to come out of it?
I'm 4 years into it, and I tried to do the calculations on how long it would take me to come out of it at one point, and it was so scary that I stopped doing them.
fair enough. Thank you for sharing that. Also appreciate you being willing to share. How are your feelings in relation to that? Like, Luke was talking about people feel helpless, that kind of thing. Can you relate to that? Have you got a way of coping?
I definitely understand the feeling of helplessness. Probably not the most healthy way of coping, but it's just denial. I've occasionally tried to kind of, you know, crunch numbers myself, but the lack of knowledge around, like, how the debt is going to change with the changing in interest rates, and the kind of impossibility of the amount that I would have to put in while I'm also trying to save a deposit for a house. It just gets really overwhelming really quickly.
Yeah, that sounds like pressure from so many angles. Luke, can I invite you in first to kind of speak to some of what Sarah has expressed?
Yeah, I think we really hear just how overwhelming of an experience it can be and how big it feels in terms of I'm in this position and I can't really see a way through it. And I think that's an experience which doesn't just reflect on the number of that you've got on your debt balance. That can affect, it plays on your mind. It affects your sleep. It affects your relationships. It affects your ability to do the things in life that you enjoy because you can't afford it anymore. So all of these are kind of hits to your well-being. So a lot of the advice that's given is really how do we take this big, enormous thing and break it down into some bite-sized pieces so we can chip away at it and just make some, very, very small steps of progress over time so it feels less overwhelming and less out of our control.
Mm. Vicky Staff, how often do you hear from people on the debt helpline, from people like Sarah who have a lot of HEX debt?
We definitely hear from people via our chat service who are struggling with student loans. Our chat service does tend to attract a younger demographic, and it's often people who are 35 years and younger. Who have these massive HEX debts that they keep hearing, through the media, this is going to affect your ability to buy a house and, the bank will hold this against you and all these sorts of things. And so it's definitely something that we see a lot of via that particular chat service that we have.
And is there anything that people in Sarah's position, any resources that they can access?
Definitely contacting the National Debt Helpline, of course. But look, going back to what Luke said, it's exactly what a financial counsellor would do, would be to break it down and to start essentially walking someone through the process of tracking what's happening for them financially right now.
Thank you so much, Sarah, for sharing your story. I hope that's been helpful. Thank you for calling in and sharing on 1-300-225-576. We're going to go straight to another caller, John, on the mid-north coast of New South Wales. Welcome to Life Matters, John. What is the experience with debt that you want to share with us?
Well, good morning. I'm now 65-year-old, and I bought my first property only by chance when I was 32. And it was a small unit in Bondi, and I worked three jobs in order to get on top of that debt. And then I moved on. I still own that unit in Bondi because once you get into the property market, it's a good thing to keep something. But now I own five properties, and through my life I've had a lot of times where I've felt that pinch. I moved to the Riverina at one stage and bought a farm, first year of a 10-year drought, and we slogged through it.
So, John, what about, that's you own many properties, but when it comes to debt, what do you want to say about the stress, financial stress and debt?
Well, number one, you don't go into over your head, but number two, you live, I suppose we lived our life fairly frugally. We raised four kids and so forth. Mm. But we looked at it as a long-term thing.
Sure.
And it's going to help us into our retirement. We were in right up to our necks at different times during our life. And we didn't overspend. Our first thing was, pay what we owed. And then if we struggled, we cut back on something else.
Okay. Sounds like you want to make an observation about people in debt these days. Do you want to share that?
It's more that you can get overwhelmed with what you can see rather than what's ahead. Mm. I never got a first-time buyer's grant. I had to pay mortgage insurance on my thing, mm-hmm. and I just worked through it. And as I said, I worked three jobs to start with, and
But was it, I'm just curious, John, how many years ago did you buy these properties?
Yeah, that's the other thing. The world has changed a bit. I bought in Bondi 32 years ago. I bought in Darlinghurst after that, Randwick, and then in the Riverina. So
Well, you're very fortunate, John. That's quite a portfolio you've got there. So that's thank you so much for that. I mean, I want to come to you, Vicky, for a second, because I know from reading up on this, people in John's situation, they might have been up to their eyeballs in debt, you know, back in the days of, you know, 17% interest rates. But I understand that it's the ratio, the debt ratio that we're in right now. Australians carry some of the highest household debt in the world because things are so much more expensive, and vis-a-vis how much we bring in, there's a big gap there, right, that might not have existed, you know, a few decades earlier.
Definitely. And look, I just want to acknowledge what John said. You know, my parents also experienced financial hardship in the 90s and, you know, worked nonstop, multiple jobs as well to pull themselves out of that. It is a strength of that age group that, and a testament to them that they were able to do that at that time. But quite rightly, things have changed, and you know, a house now is just so much more, exponentially so much more than average wages. So the sheer volume of debt that people are taking on in order to do just what John said, you know, get your foot in the door, get into that property ladder. It's very different to what you know, older age groups were facing back in the day. And so I think that each generation has their own set of, have had their own set of challenges. And I think that the current situation, it certainly feels like it's coming in from all sides, from many people who are, for example, the millennial age group and Gen Z. It feels like housing is out of reach. It feels like just being able to buy groceries is not what it used to be. And it's happened very quickly, very, very quickly post-COVID. We've seen that trying to fill a basket at the grocery store has just about doubled in front of people's eyes.
Yeah.
So it is a very different challenge to perhaps what older generations faced.
Before we move on to other calls, I want to get your take, Luke, because, you know, we have to acknowledge every generation has its own set of struggles. People work very, very hard all the way through the generations, I think. But when it's a younger person trying to enter the property market, does the view of some older generations who might not experience what the day-to-day of what it's like to be just trying to make it out there, does that add to the kind of emotional and psychological pressure that, you know, other generations could do it, how come I can't? And is there even a bit of resentment and frustration there?
Yeah, I think the young people we talk to, they really run through a very long list of kind of challenges that are affecting their mental health at the moment. And, you know, the cost of living pressures, the housing affordability issues, the rising inequality, along with a whole range of other concerns they have about how the world's going, can really, you know, affect their mental health. And I think what often sits under many of these conversations is we have this tendency to kind of individualize your financial situation as being a reflection of your personal choices and the decisions you've made. And we know it's much more complicated than that. When we look at the data of, you know, nearly half of Australians are just making ends meet or going backwards financially, 46% of Australians say their financial pressures have caused them distress in the last 12 months. This is a really big system issue. And I think when we make it about the individual's choices, we make it harder for them to open up if they're struggling. Because to open up about, I'm not doing so well with my money, can feel like it's a reflection on how you are as a person and how good you are at managing your money, which can be difficult to open up about if that's the assumption in the conversation.
Even the terms we use, I'm good with money, I'm bad with money, that becomes like a judgment of ourself and who we are. When in reality, who was our teacher? You know, what were the conditions? There's a lot of context around there. Just some stats. So CanStar research shows that 35% of Australians have an average of $15,179 in personal debt. That's $6,000 more from their their last report, 45% of Gen Zs admit they have personal debt of approximately $23,888. That's a lot of money to be carrying. Luke and Vicky are very experienced in this field, and they can offer general advice if you have a question for them. Let's move on now to Peter on the central coast of New South Wales. Welcome to Life Matters. How are you going with debt, Peter?
Well, I'm going excellently with debt if you rate it on...
You've got a close relationship.
I have a maxed out credit card. I'm on a pension.
Yep.
I own the unit I'm in. And I'm paying $800-something a month levies. I went to the Services Australia because if I was renting, I could get rental assistance, which isn't much anyway. But as an owner, I can't. So when I'm paying that, I'm paying medical, all sorts of things, I find I can't go forward. I have to pay the interest on the credit card. I'm lying on the lounge. I'm a bit sad. You're isolated because you're older anyway. It's not easy.
No, that sounds really, really tough, Peter. Do you have any help either, you know, on the emotional, psychological side, or are you talking to a debt counselor or someone who can help you out on that side?
Nothing. I'm more likely to be the one helping other people.
Right. All right. Well, lucky we have assembled our Avengers here. Vicky, can I invite you in to talk to Peter a little bit?
Absolutely. Hi, Peter. Thanks for calling in today. Look, definitely, we do a lot of work with people who are facing a similar situation to you. When you've got a credit card, one of the first things I want to say to you is that you do have rights. You do have rights to reach out to your credit card provider and to ask for a hardship arrangement. And I think a lot of people are, you know, worried about what it might mean to reach out to a credit card provider and say, you know, put your hand up and say, I am struggling here. But absolutely, the law is on your side and you do have a right to do that. So that would be my first suggestion to you is to let your credit card provider know that this is your reality and this is something that is affecting your quality of life on a daily basis.
Hmm. Peter, I'm curious, what prompted you to call in this morning and share?
Well, I've been listening and to all sorts of subjects. I thought I might bring about different ones you had going on. So when I rang about this, I thought that I'm not the only one in this situation. Pensioners, we hear about young, and please don't take it wrongly, I'm the first one to help young people. I've done it all my life. That was part of what was what my career was. But all we hear about is young people struggles, young people struggles, young people struggles. We don't hear anyone going into bat for pensioners who are choosing for food or heat or staying at home isolated because they can't afford to go anywhere. I'm probably younger than some of those struggling with that, and I can go a few places, but not many. I'm at home a lot, and I'm going on the days they mark down the food so that I can bring it home and cook it on that day, so it's cheap. I go to the petrol station at 8 o'clock at night because it's 5 cents cheaper a litre. With things like that, I don't need praise for that. It's just systems that you've got to put in place. But I'm not the only one. No one seems to be going into bat for pensioners and saying these people who have actually paid tax all their life to support everybody else are struggling, and who's helping us?
Mm. Thank you, Peter.
The pension needs to go up.
Yeah, thank you, Peter, for calling and sharing. And maybe, Luke, just some final words to Peter before we move on to the next caller.
Yeah, I think he's made a great point. We hear some really heartbreaking stories of our kind of older adults in our community who are not able to put the heat on, not able to put food on the table. And often that can be, you know, we know that financial distress is often the shadow that can come off the back of difficult things that happen in life, whether you get ill, got a medical condition, whether you're grieving, a relationship breakdown. There are lots of things that happen to us in life, curveballs, that can really knock us over financially as well. And I think our older adults do absolutely need more support. I think Peter's made a great point.
Vicky, I want to just have a question for you. I'm sure you must hear so many tough stories from people who contact the National Debt Helpline. What drives you to work in this field?
Definitely my experience growing up, you know, being a child in a family that, you know, was struggling to put food on the table, struggling to keep a roof over our heads. You know, my parents were small business owners during the early 90s when there was a recession. So, you know, I relate to a lot of what people are going through when they say, you know, we've done everything we can think of. You know, we've cut back on the food we're eating. We've cut all these things right back to the bone and we're still struggling. And I guess for me, I've lived through it. I know how that feels day in, day out. But on the flip side of that, I've also seen my parents come out the other side. And so my parents who now live, are now living their best retirement years. My story is one of hope, but my story is also not exceptional. There are many people in our sector of financial counselling who have been through financial hardship, have gotten through to the other side and are doing this work because they want to help people, you know, go through that journey and find financial stability on the other side.
Let's take another call now from Harry in Western Victoria. Welcome to Life Matters, Harry. What is your relationship with debt right now?
Right now, Tegan, we are carrying well into my 80s, far too much debt. And my worry is that my wife on a pension after my demise will have to deal with that, and she could not. So we've made a bold decision to sell the house and go and live on a boat, debt-free, mortgage-free. And I might say, thanks to information technology, I can still earn a bit of money from the boat using IT. I have done these bold decisions twice before in my life, and each time I managed to get free of debt.
Okay. Well, that's one very novel approach, Harry. I really hope that it works out for you. And thank you so much for calling in and sharing that. And happy travels on the boat. Let's go to Judy in Canberra. Welcome to Life Matters, Judy. When I did the call out for debt this morning, what was your reaction and why have you decided to boldly call in?
I'm ringing about injustice, actually. I lost the age pension 3 years ago in my 80s, and I have no income, and I'm assisted financially by my two elderly sisters.
Yeah.
I sold my home to relinquish my caring role for a disabled daughter so we could have two downsized homes. And I've since had to attend four tribunals at Centrelink and four tribunals for financial hardship, as Centrelink considers that a gift to my daughter, even though I just gave her the money to purchase it in her own name. And she's an NDIS recipient.
That sounds like a lot of bureaucracy to have to wade through, Judy. What is the psychological, emotional impact of having to, you know, kind of go navigate the system like that? It can't be easy.
No, I've had a lot of family support, obviously, but I have been to Legal Aid and they are arranging now for me to have counselling with Relationships Australia. And I have an alternative too. I could go through my GP and have psychiatric help.
Okay. That's really good to hear that you're being supported, Judy. Really appreciate you calling in and good luck to you and the rest of your family. This is Life Matters on ABC Radio National, and many of you are calling in to talk about financial stress and the emotional, psychological impact of there, how you got there. I'm with Vicky Staff. She's a coordinator of the National Debt Helpline, as well as Dr. Luke Martin, a clinical psychologist and senior specialist at Beyond Blue. They've got lots of experience talking to people who have similar experiences, experiencing financial stress. So if you want to call and ask them a question, they can offer general advice on 1-300-225-7-6. Luke, I want to come to you. I'm just curious, about whether there are certain mindsets that are developed. You know, how do we develop our relationship to money and debt? Are there formative experiences that shape these attitudes, our spending habits, how much debt we're willing to get into?
Yeah, often we call these our money stories. And these are really shaped by experiences we all have in life that are really unique to each of us. And you're right, the family we grew up in and how our parents spoke about money and how they related to money, we really internalize those messages. And so for some people, money represents safety and security. For other people, money is the yardstick that you use to evaluate how successful in life you're being. And so, you know, we all have a money story. So growing up, we absolutely had more than enough. But we didn't have a lot, so we had to be careful with our money. So one of the money stories I've internalized is you don't waste money. You don't buy things you don't need. And you can imagine, you know, how much that annoys my wife and kids. But my dad, like, he would buy a hat and wear it for 45 years until it was just this little disheveled bit of cotton on his head. That was it was quite hilarious. But that was kind of the messaging. And so knowing your own money story, and as a couple, knowing each other's money story can help you navigate money conversations because you approach it with a little bit more curiosity and it takes a little bit of the heat out of the conflict sometimes.
Vicky, what are some of the insights into people's money stories, as Luke says, that you've gained from, you know, talking to people on the helpline?
Yeah, we certainly get people presenting, having already pre-labeled themselves, you know, when they speak to us. One particular young person that sticks in my mind said, you know, I'm bad with money, and my dad tells me I'm bad with money too. And it was just that moment of, you know, goodness, this person has internalized this criticism from their first teacher. Really, your parents are your first teachers. And it was such work to get this person to see that, you know, money is a tool, and like any tool, you can learn how to use it to your benefit. So people definitely arrive with having labeled themselves or having had people close to them label, you know, their relationship with money.
Let's take another call from Leanne in Eastern Victoria. Welcome to Life Matters. What made you want to call in today?
I just want to approach the subject of parents that float their older children. I have a gorgeous son and daughter-in-law, but they've both, unfortunately, no fault of their own, become unemployed in their long-term careers due to the COVID situation. But I worry about his mental health because they built their own home. They have a child. They've been in the home for 6 or 7 years now. And now he rang me yesterday crying to say that they've had to cease the payments on their home for a while and possibly just pay the interest only. Mm. Because, yeah, they're really struggling. He's got random work here and there, just doing some labouring stuff, and they're only in their early 30s. And so this beautiful home that they've built and the dream that they had and how well that they were doing with their money, et cetera, et cetera, and then all of a sudden, bang, they are unemployed. So all their finances that they had have all gone on day-to-day living, week-to-week living. They can't get any type of Centrelink assistance or anything like that. I'm actually on my way to go and see him today so that I can sit with him because she's gone off to do her Friday job, that I can just sit with him because I'm really concerned about this debt, and it's only going to get worse because the interest rates on homes have just gone up again.
Yeah, that's really tough on so many fronts, Leanne. For yourself as a parent, seeing this happen, it must be really hard. And it sounds like you're there to support, you're heading there, which is wonderful. But, I mean, what is the psychological, emotional toll that you have observed and that is concerning you?
Well, I've just retired nearly 25 years of being a mental health worker for young people. Right. So I can see that my concern for him is if he spiraled and then thinks that you know, can't see anything out of that dark tunnel that he's in. That he says, oh, he said, I don't know what, he said, I'm worried, Mum, I think we're going to lose the house. And he said, that gives us nothing. He said, we've got nothing left in the bank. He said, and I'm really, really worried. And he was crying so hard. And I've never seen my boy be that, because he's been a proud guy, you know, lovely dad, awesome dad. And their concerns are about, you know, their child, of what's going to happen here. My concern with him especially, because his partner's a little bit stronger, that men, you know, men do face depression really hard and they don't talk about it. So this whole thing's been going on with them for probably a year. And now he has spoken last night, and it was only because I could hear it in his voice. And I said, what's going on, mate? Mm. You know, what's wrong? What's going on? And then he broke down and he said, please don't tell his partner that I have spoken to you about this, because she doesn't want people to know how bad we are. And like, he's such a soft guy, but he's a strong boy. But now I'm seeing this breaking him. His strength is weakening. And I don't want him to have the suicidal ideations that if he goes, then, you know, everything that he's got in his superannuation will go.
No, none of us want that. And I think, Luke, this would be from Beyond Blue, senior specialist, would be a very good time for you to come in and talk to Leanne. And what are you hearing, and what kind of help do you think that she can provide to her son so that absolutely that does not happen?
Yeah, I think obviously it's really heartbreaking to hear your story. And as a mum, this must be so difficult to see your son kind of really becoming, you know, less and less himself with the challenges he's facing. I think in many ways he's so lucky to have you as a mum who's so in tune and so looking out for him and willing to have these supportive conversations. So I think that's really protective in and of itself. I think we know, and as you've touched on as well, you know, for all of us, but particularly men, there can be that real shame and secrecy that goes on when you feel as though things are spinning out of control and it's hard to put your hand up and talk about it. Often, you know, as you've said, things can spiral to a point of rock bottom. So it's really important we try to disrupt that cycle much sooner. And you're doing that by having these conversations. We need at this point to really be reaching out to some specialist support. So giving Beyond Blue a call, the financial debt helpline. Let's bring in the supports, you know, sooner rather than later to stop that spiral that you're worried about.
Leanne, those numbers are available online, and they are, I will read them out shortly, but I'll share them with you right now. The National Debt Helpline is 1-800-007-007. Beyond Blue's 24-hour counseling service is 1-300-224-636. That's 1-300-224-636. Thank you so much for calling, and we really are wishing you all the best. Vicky, actually, before I let you go, Leanne, Vicky, could you come in and chat with Leanne a little bit?
Yeah, certainly. Leanne, you know, what you've described just now is something that we do hear quite a lot on the National Debt Helpline. Most people who call us are in that mid-stage of life. They are struggling with mortgage debt. And unfortunately, we are seeing a lot of an increase in suicidal ideation as well. So, you know, I think that I feel so much better knowing that you are in his life. That was one of the first things that I thought when I heard you speak, is that he's so lucky to have you as a support, and that he feels that he can trust you and confide in you over what's happening. But certainly listening to his partner and how she is clearly feeling a sense of shame around the debt and what's happening and wants to keep it quiet. And again, I completely understand that as a reaction as well. So I just want to reassure you that reaching out to the National Debt Helpline is going to be is something that I very much recommend that your son do to try and find out what his options are, because it sounds like you know, he's considering interest only, but I'm pretty confident there are going to be more options than that available to him.
Yeah, really important to stress that there are options available on the psychological care point as well as the financial counselling point. We're going to end with Aaron in Wollongong, New South Wales. Welcome to Life Matters, Aaron. What's your debt story?
Hi, Bev. I've paid off about $400,000 in the last 10 years. So I wanted to give some hope to your listeners.
How did you get into the $400,000 debt?
That was about $40,000 worth of $20,000 worth of credit card debt, and then a very, very large mortgage that I was not managing or handling at all.
Oh my gosh. And so having come out the other side, really do appreciate you coming and telling us that there is hope. What was, very briefly, how did you make that happen? What were the changes that you made? What kind of help did you get?
Yeah. So the most important thing that people need to do is they need to track their money. There's so many apps out there. It's very easy to track your money. But don't just track. You have to budget. And it's disappointing that there hasn't been a conversation about budgeting in the last hour. Do another show, because this is such an important issue.
Sure.
Budget, and then assess. Then you have to assess, because if you can't live within your means, you have to make changes. And those changes have to be radical, you know, from how many times you get your nails done a month, to how many coffees you buy a week, to where you live. I think what we've seen in this program so far is that we've seen young people and old people struggling with debt. And, you know, different generations have different challenges, but ultimately you must live within your means. That's the bottom line. You can't be getting credit cards and personal loans and $500,000 and $1 million mortgages. You know, it is so stressful. You wake up at 3 a.m. in the morning, and we must not allow ourselves to live like that.
Thank you so much, Erin. I'm going to quickly come to Vicky as a financial counselor to respond to Erin. Is what Erin is saying sound? Is that good advice?
What Erin was talking about in terms of tracking your money and then setting a budget, it was said much more eloquently than what I was trying to get at earlier with our caller with the HECS debt. I'm also a big believer in the power of knowledge. And unless you know very, very clearly where your money is coming from and where it's going to, it's difficult to make informed decisions about budgeting, for example. Mm-hmm. I see budgeting as a second step. The power of tracking your money cannot be underestimated. And so it's certainly something that financial counsellors often do as an initial step when working with people, is to really understand exactly dollar for dollar where your money is going.
I want to thank you both so much for joining this conversation. Clearly, there's so much more to say about it, but we'll have to end it here. Vicky Staff is the coordinator of the National Debt Helpline, and that number is 1-800-007-007 to speak to a financial counselor. They can refer you to a financial counselor in your area if you need more help. Dr. Luke Martin is a clinical psychologist and the supervising psychologist at the senior specialist at Beyond Blue, The number for Beyond Blue's 24-hour counseling service is 1-300-222-4636. They have a free online tool for managing financial stress at their website, beyondblue.org.au. And I know that you may have feelings of distress listening to these calls or thinking about your own situation. Those numbers are there for you to help get help. There's also Lifeline 13 11 14. That's 13 11 14. Next up, we're off to talk to the aunties.
Anthony Burke here, host of By Design on ABC Radio National, a show about the clever ideas and human stories behind the spaces, systems, and objects shaping everyday life. Whether you're curious about architecture, interior design, fashion, or anything in between, we reveal why design matters in a rapidly changing world. By Design, Tuesdays at 10 a.m. on ABC Radio National and ABC Listen.
When age gap friendships start to feel, well, a little old, it's time to ask Auntie. And here, offering their wise and worldly advice free of charge, welcome to your aunties, mentor, journalist, executive Denise Erickson, and comedian, writer, friend to many, Jennifer Wong. Hello, Denise. Hi, Jen.
Hello.
Lovely to be here. Hi.
Aunties, before we get to our letter writer, quick check-in with you. Jennifer, do you have friends of varying ages?
I do. I have friends who are more than 20 years older than me, and less who are younger than me, actually.
Okay, that's good. Intergenerational friendships. Denise, you've got a lot of long-term friends. Have the friendships changed over the years due to getting on?
Oh, my God, yes. This is a really interesting one. I've got loads of friends who are at least 20 years older than me, and I love that. But I've also got my Brads and Margarets who are my older friends. And so there's quite a lot of differences in there, actually, as you age, I think.
Well, great that you're both here. This week's dilemma comes from Carol, and this is what she shares. Over the last few years, I've developed strong friendships with two women, both significantly older than me. The first is an old colleague who's always up for a dinner arrangement no matter how last minute. And the second, a sophisticated grandma with a buzzing social calendar who I met at school pickup. As friends, I've loved their take life by the horns attitudes as well as their experience and wisdom. But recently, these friendships have begun to feel more like duty than fun, with both friends becoming, and how do I say this without being sounding judgmental, difficult. Denise, how are you feeling about Carol's scenario so far? Can you relate at all?
Oh, look, yes, I can, actually. I think I live in fear that my younger friends are going, oh, my gosh, she's getting so old, she's getting grumpy, she's getting all these things. So I sort of see that sort of frisson between friendships as you age. But it's also not about younger and older friendships necessarily. I think as we age, our friendships take on a different perspective, if that makes sense. Mm. So I'm feeling there's some trouble on the horizon with this one.
Oh, well, it's always the way it is in this part of the show. Jen, how are you relating to this situation? Do you see any warning flags fluttering?
Look, you know, the way that you framed it, Beverly, I'm waiting with bated breath what the difficulties are going to be. But I really, the way Denise describes it, it made me instantly think about when I'm with someone younger who I consider a friend, when I don't know how to do something internet related and I start to freak out that they know how much older I am than them. And then I get more and more flustered and then I can't like type in front of them and all these kinds of things. So yes, really very, very self-aware.
Okay. So the flags are rising within yourself, Jennifer, is what you're saying. Denise, friends that are more duty than fun. Is it fair to be unhappy about that?
Yes, I think it's incredibly fair. I think that, you know, as I say, friendships come and go, and it's okay. And often it doesn't matter whether it's age or what are the other circumstances, but they come and go. So you have to sort of, like any relationship, work out whether you want to be part of it, you know, and I'm sure we're going to be talking about stuff like that.
Absolutely. Mm. Carol has more to share. Here is what she has to say. The grandma has become incredibly critical and demanding. Last time our dinner plans fell through, she invited herself to my place for a cooked meal and forced me to play Scrabble till 11 p.m. while criticizing my cooking, the wine, my messy kitchen, and my Scrabble technique. She's always been a brilliant conversationalist with an acerbic wit, but now she often asks inappropriate questions, usually about my sex life, and her stories about past relationships have become so lurid, I've begun to think they're made up. I've also begun to think that perhaps there's an underlying health issue like dementia, which seems even more likely with my other friend. The last time we met for lunch, she went to the toilet and didn't return. I eventually found her at the supermarket across the road, getting into an altercation about the price of apple crumble. And when I tried to help, she ended up yelling at me too. Okay, so now Auntie's Carol has shared more detail on exactly what she is finding difficult. Jennifer Wong, how is this new information landing with you?
Well, I think there's two different, very different things going on. So the first, the grandma, who's, you know, the Scrabble, the cooking, the criticizing. For me, I feel like that could, for a person at any age, just be a friendship developing into that lovely stage where the boundaries kind of become a little bit messy, like the kitchen that she's been accused of having. You know, the intimacy, right? You start to feel like you can perhaps say things that you wouldn't when you first met, you know, and forcing someone to play Scrabble and then criticizing their technique. Well, for some, that sounds like a perfect evening, really. But I think that's a little bit different. You know, at any age, we can have these relationships where we feel like, oh, I'm doing something that I don't really want to do right now. And that's a question about, you know, sitting down and going, hey, I these are the ways that I would prefer for us to be hanging out. Can we have a talk about that?
That's a very good point. You know? You don't have to be 20 years apart to find your friends annoying. Very, very good point.
That's right. I mean, you know, I have friends my own age who I find incredibly annoying. So I'm kidding, right? I know. But the other thing, the second thing, which is much more serious, is when what do you do when you think there's an underlying health issue like dementia? And I think that is something to be taken a little bit more seriously.
Absolutely. Denise, what questions are arising for you after hearing this latest chapter from Carol?
Oh, look, I'm sorry. If someone came over to my house and and rubbished my dinner, didn't like the wine, said my kitchen was messy. I don't mind Scrabble, but messy kitchen? No. Breach of the rules, sadly. So I wouldn't actually necessarily have her back in that circumstance, because friendship's a two-way street for me, and this is regardless of age. I have boundaries with my friends, and I'm sure they have with me, and I'm sure I breach them a lot. But I don't want someone sitting in my house saying that I'm a lousy cook and that the wine's not very nice.
No, that doesn't seem like very good guest behaviour.
No, it's rubbish guest behaviour. And I think that, you know, I'm starting to sense with these two examples that Carol's talking about is that the friendship is veering into a caring relationship,
Let's get into this in the final chapter, Denise.
Yeah.
If these women were family, I'd of course feel obligated to stay socially connected, but I already have a lot going on in my life with my own aging parents. That said, I feel incredibly guilty about ditching two friends simply because they're dealing with the reality of aging. I mean, part of why we initially became so close was that I met them during an incredibly painful divorce, and they really helped me say F off to the ageist and sexist voices in my head. Also, if I do say something, do I need to potentially bring up dementia? I don't have phone numbers for their family members. So I've practiced radical avoidance, but I feel like after all these years of friendship, the least they deserve is honesty. Is there any way to give them that without causing unnecessary hurt? Okay, my eyes on the clock. Big questions. Denise, I would love you to just have at it. What is your final advice for Carol?
Okay. Set boundaries. Friendships come and go, but set boundaries on the ones that you've got. It doesn't sound to me like you want to continue the friendship with the nana. But if you do, coffee out once a month, whatever it is, you can set the rules on that. Your former colleague, who's the one that I gathered is she's thinking about dementia, I don't know that I would have that discussion with her, because what are you going to do after you've had that discussion? Would she welcome you, say, tracking down her family and talking to them confidentially? These are the questions you've got to ask yourself. And so if you're not prepared to engage more deeply on the dementia question, I would either find out the family's phone numbers or whatever and hand that concern to them.
Okay. And Jennifer Wong, very quickly, your final advice.
You know, Denise put it so perfectly. The only thing I would add is, could we involve a Scrabble club?
Could we?
I'd take the burden off and that one-on-one. Find a common thing, take it outside of the home where no one can criticize your kitchen.
It's the University of the Third Age. I hear that they do a lot of different programs. Thank you so much to both of our aunties. Jennifer Wong is a writer and comedian. She is the author of the book Chopsticks or Fork, based on the hit ABC TV series. Tomorrow night, Canberra, you are lucky. She's got a show on Feast with Jennifer Wong and Friends. Jennifer, where is the venue for that?
It's Canberra Theatre Centre, and we're happy to welcome ABC favourite Costa from Gardening Australia
Wonderful.
To tell his stories.
Tickets available online?
Yes, at the Canberra Theatre website. Thank
Get on
you.
It, people. And also, journalist and executive director of Screen Careers, Denise Erickson, thank you so much as well.
Absolute pleasure.
If you have a vexing dilemma that needs our help, having people talk it out can be very cathartic. Our aunties are here for you. So please write it up, email it to lifematters@abc.net.au, just like Carol did. Thank you, Carol. We'll get our crew of aunties on the case. That email address again is lifematters@abc.net.au. No problem too small for the aunties, I assure you. A big thank you to Life Matters producers who bring you all the stories and interviews you hear across the week. They are Grace Pashley, Max Rowley, Lucy Sweeney, Beck Zajac, and executive producer Lachlan McIntosh. Our audio engineer is Carrie Dell. You can find all Life Matters episodes on ABC Listen. Search for Life Matters, tap the heart to follow. You'll be all set. I'm Beverly Wang. I'll catch you next time.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.